Hi, everybody. Thanks for joining us. For those of you who don't know me, my name is Peter Llewellyn and I run the services at medcomsnetworking.com. So information services, resources, activities, and so on for people who work across the globe in and around medical communications, medical education, medical publishing, the associated businesses, and so on. You'll find lots of stuff is going on, lots of information resources at medcomsnetworking.com. Specifically, if you go to Network Pharma TV, you'll find hundreds of videos on all manner of topics now to do with medcoms. And particularly for those of you who want to come into the business, maybe as a medical writer, an account manager, editor, or whatever, you'll find lots of useful information and specifically guidance to hopefully help you at firstmedcomsjob.com. And we're currently running a series of First Medcoms Job webinars. And I'm actually, I am delighted and slightly in awe of the panel that I have here today. I'll allow you to introduce yourselves individually. But what we're going to be talking today is primarily about medical writing tests. And we have people on the panel who spend their time supporting people who want to get into medcoms and work in medcoms already. And something like a medical writing test is an important topic of conversation. So absolutely delighted you're on and talking about this very important issue. Having said that, audience members, please throw any questions at us you like, and we will broaden the conversation and go around it accordingly. Okay. However, let's for the next 40 minutes, let's talk about tests and so on with this very, very impressive panel. And I'm going to start asking Katia to introduce herself.
Thanks, Peter. So I'm Katia. I'm actually the non-medical writer of the group. So we've tried to include a broader perspective today. My first half of my career was in medical publishing and medical communications. And I did a variety of done a variety of different roles, editorial, project management, account management, client services. So hopefully I'll bring a sort of wider perspective to the discussions. And when I left Medcoms, I followed my calling to do coaching, which was the area that I really loved doing. So I still work with individuals in communications generally, as part of Bloom, where I mentor young professionals, and then supporting Peter with his Medcoms careers. And really, for me, it's about learning skills, techniques, and strategies, and they can be learned. You know, everything what we're talking about today is about learning skills and strategies and techniques. And I think once you've got that really helps you with being able to promote yourself. I think lots of people find it difficult to promote themselves. So hopefully we'll be able to include that as part of the discussion as well.
Excellent. Okay, Katia, thank you. So we're going in alphabetical order. Sarah, you're next. Sarah Nelson, tell us who you
Hi,
are.
thank you, Peter. Yep. So hello everyone. I do recognize a lot of you in the audience. So hi, and do connect with me if we haven't connected already on LinkedIn. But I'm a medical writer. I've been a medical writer in Medcoms since about 2006. But I spend most of my time now training and mentoring people like yourselves who are interested either in getting into medical writing or sort of starting a new phase of the writing career, perhaps changing from an agency position to become a freeler. So yes, I work with medical writers all over the world. And you're looking forward to talking about writing tests today.
Excellent. Okay, thanks, Sarah. Vicky, you're next.
Hi, thanks, Peter. Great to be on this panel. So I'm an ex-academic turned medical writer. I think I started my medical writing career back in 2017. So I guess relatively more new to medical communications than some of my other panelists, I suppose. But I started my career in an agency in London, and then ended up moving to Ireland because of my husband, and ended up working for a big pharma company there as a medical writer, and then got promoted is to a management level, leading a team of writers in that company. But I've also worked as a freelancer. More recently, I've decided to start freelancing again just for a little bit more flexibility. But I also run a blog called Biomed Badass, which speaks around getting careers in pharma and progressing a career in the pharma industry as well. And also, of course, because of my background, I touch a lot on medical writing and medical communication specifically within that area. Okay, I'll hand
Excellent.
over
That's
to
perfect.
Eleanor.
Thank you very much. Eleanor, go on.
Super. Hi, everybody. I am Eleanor Steele, and I work as the Medcoms mentor. I've been in Medcoms since 2004, And I worked my way up the medical writing side of things at a variety of different agencies. And I've actually been freelance since 2018, really focusing on the training and mentoring specifically for medical writers, right from people who are hoping to break into medcoms through to scientific directors within agencies and beyond, and supporting freelancers. So I have designed medical writing tests, marked hundreds, and supported people who are hoping to break into medical writing to do the best they can on their medical writing tests, including with YouTube videos. And I've just popped a link to my very first YouTube video, which was all about how to ace your medical writing test, into the comments. So hopefully you can see that. Don't watch it now, though. Watch it afterward. But hopefully that will help you with any medical writing test that you end up doing.
Excellent. Okay. Just on that point, Vicky, Eleanor, for the people who are watching this recording and can't see the comments box, you're just emphasize you've got the YouTube channel, which you call the Medcoms Mentor, don't you?
Yeah, absolutely. And I will put a comment onto the video once it's on YouTube as well to link through.
Excellent. Okay. And so, look, I would start this conversation by saying, hopefully usefully, that there is no such thing as a medical writing test and a magic answer and a way to pass it, sort of thing. So if anyone thinks they're going to go away with the magic answer, or, you know, it's not going to work like that. But there are strategies you can undertake. There are ways of approaching it. There are certainly things you can do which will limit your chances very rapidly if you're not careful. And there is ways of going about it and ways of thinking about it. But the bottom line is, most people coming to medical writing in medcoms will face a medical writing test. But there's a whole variety of approaches that are taken by different employers. Okay. So on that note, Ellen, let's just start with you. Can you just talk a little bit about the sort of nature of the sorts of tests we're talking about?
Yeah. So a medical writing test is not usually an enormous piece of work. It's normally going to be relatively short in terms of the length of content. You might be asked to write a newsletter article or an abstract for a paper, maybe an introduction to the paper, but that's often the kind of longest type of content you'd be expected to write. You might be asked to do a slide deck summarizing a paper or some information that you're given, but it's to really give you a taste of the kind of writing that you may well be doing if you get the job, partly so that you can see if it's something that you actually want to spend your working life doing, but also to see the approach that you take when you are faced with that kind of work. So you will be given a brief explaining what to do and all of the supporting information that you should need to actually be able to complete the task. And then it's up to you to go away and do it.
Okay. Vicky, pick up on that and take us a look. And specifically, Vicky, just out of interest, from a pharma company point of view, for instance, we're going to be talking mostly about agencies recruiting medical writers by definition here, but you've got the pharma company background. Would there be a difference in approach in a pharma company looking for a medical writer?
No, I'm thinking the writing tests I took for getting into pharma, which, you know, it's not the most exhaustive experience because it's N equals one basically, but it was exactly the same as I'd sat for an agency. So I think tend to use similar types of tests, really.
Okay.
I mean, the roles are analogous. If you're a medcoms writer in pharma or a medcoms writer in agency, need the same skill set.
Okay. Let's start with this, and Vicky, just pick up on this for a second. Eleanor's talked about you get a brief, you sort of do what you're asked to do, sort of thing. Can you talk around that a little bit? I mean,
yeah,
I don't want to put words in your mouth. So talk around what someone can expect to be given, and how they're then going to respond to that.
Yeah, I don't know what the other panelists' experiences are, but some briefs are better than others. I mean, there should be five main components of the brief that you should be able to get, five key pieces of information out of that brief to be able to deliver the document. So really you need to understand, you know, what it is you have to write. And I think, you know, Eleanor discussed some of those examples, some of the most common examples you might get, slide decks, abstracts, etc. Then you need to know who you're writing for, so who the audience is, whether it's scientific or non-scientific. When I was in Heathrow, I gave a workshop on how to write medical writing tests. and a lady there told me that she'd got a plain language summary as a writing test. So there can be, you know, other examples, you know, and broader audiences that you might be expected to write for as well. And I suspect, as Eleanor said, it reflects really the type of work that the employer wants you to do as to the sort of test they'll give you. You need to know what kind of start or style guide you need to be using at a bare minimum, whether it should be British or international American English that you're using. And you're within your rights to ask them if there's a particular style you need to use if they haven't included that. But then often they'll just say, you know, use AMA style or something like that. You then should have source materials that you can use. So sometimes they might give you a paper and ask you to summarize it. Sometimes they might just give you data tables, tables of information, if they want you to be able to analyze the data and pull out the key. Well, not analyze so much as be able to see what the key information is and how to present that. And then obviously you need to know what the size limit of the document is as well. Is there a word count that they've given you? Is there a slide number that you can't exceed if it's a slide deck? And it's important to stay within that. So a good brief should be able to cover all of those things, and you should be able to pull out those five key pieces of information. Bad brief, and you might have to go back and ask them a little bit more information.
Okay, so I'm gonna say a couple of things and see whether you all just nod at me, basically, because it just seems common sense to me. But it's a sort of, you know, people don't tend to look at what they're given. They sort of make some assumptions. I mean, I suppose all I'm saying is that the brief should tell you exactly like you've described what you need to do. And so read the brief, you know, and if it says, write, I don't know, 500 words for a nursing audience, or, you know, don't write 2000 for the top KOLs in the world just to show how clever you are. That's not the point. The point is to do as you've been asked for the audience. Yeah. So there's a bit of a discussion on that, but I think the sort of stories I hear back are of people who just haven't read the brief. It's as simple as that. And to add to that, and touch on a bit what you're saying there, in my experience, and again, people don't tend to disagree with me when I say this, but feel free if you want to. But in my experience, the agencies, the companies, the employers don't tend to be trying to catch people out. They provide a brief and expect to follow it. They don't mind too much if you go back to them and say, can you clarify this or that? And there's an argument to say that's not a bad thing, because it's what you're going to be doing when you're in an agency world anyway. But they're not trying to catch you out, like you hear, you know, silly games being played in other industries to try and catch people. And they're not really sort of giving you half a brief just to see whether you've got the nouns to come back to us and ask. I don't get the impression, and I've never seen this business working like that. I mean, you're sort of, I think you're all agreeing with me, but Sarah, do you agree with what I'm saying there, or do you see more tricks and whatever being played?
No, I think your first point there, Peter, about like following the instructions is really important. Actually, I've spoken to two agencies just in the last couple of weeks who have put a job ad out, and they've given specific instructions about how to apply, and they won't look at anyone that didn't do that. All right. So if you haven't named your CV in a certain way, or if, you know, they're not even going to look at it because they get so many CVs. So that is a very important point. Thank you for raising that one, Peter. And in terms of the writing test, no, they're not trying to catch you out. It's not supposed to be overly complicated. Although I would say in, you know, the 4 years that I've been doing this mentoring role, I am seeing a bit more complexity, honestly, in writing tests. As Eleanor said at the start, you're often asked to do an abstract or a slide deck or, you know, a lay summary. And I've recently seen tests where candidates are asked to do all three of those. All right. So the standards are higher, but that's reflecting, you know, they want the very best people and they're not expecting perfection. But I'm sure in this discussion, we all sort of come to a few points that are really important, sort of some easy things that you can do to make sure that you're going to get on the short list of all of those writing tests that they get back. Yeah, so absolutely follow the instructions, do everything that they have asked you to do, do devote enough time for it. And also, if they do give you a deadline, often it's like within a week or something like that, if you're about to submit your thesis, or you're about to get married, or you're about to go on holiday, again, just say that to them, ask for a bit more time, because you don't want to rush it, and they'll be understanding. So that's
Generally, but it's those sorts of little communication skills and things like that that can very quickly make or break the progress. And as you, I think, touched on, you know, I mean, it starts right at from word go. Yes, we're focused on medical writing tests today, but think about this all the way through, you know, from your first contact with the company, the employer, you know, you need to follow the instructions in the job ad, or you need to be talking to the right person. There's no point writing to me and going, you know, dear Fred, I'm really delighted to be working with, you know, I'm not Fred, you know, sort of thing. And it's silly little things. One thing that's been talked about a lot recently, actually, is on LinkedIn. People will advertise a job and within 10 minutes, have job ads, you know, have applications arriving. And you sort of think, you're not thinking this through. You're not really understanding what we're looking for. So you're just sending me something absolutely standard. And it's very human to just go, well, they're just not tuned in. So I'm just going to take less notice of those. So be very careful from the word go, and attention to detail, attention to detail, attention to detail is always going to be the mantra. Okay. So, you know, email is very easy to just, you know, you hit the button, it goes, and you've spelt stuff wrong and all sort of. Again, I always laugh in this sort of conversation and go, you should see some of the emails I get from people who work in med comms today, you know, no attention to detail whatsoever. However, you know, at the first step, you're going to come into a business that's very, very keen to find out whether you have got it, because the full stop in the wrong place can be really, really quite crucial in a document, et cetera, sort of thing. Okay, so there's a lot of actually ground in there to cover. Katya, and let's bring you, Katya, and you said you're not the medical writer and so on, so let's broaden it a little bit, okay? But pick up on that sort of idea of being prepared, thinking things through a little bit, and you know, reading the brief and so on, which sort of applies to anything and in the context of the medical writing test, but just talk about that sort of preparation.
Definitely. I was going to add one more point following on all the other discussion points, and that's, don't panic if this is in a topic that you don't know anything about. If you've come from academia, you may have spent years, you know, specializing in a particular topic, you're confident in it, you know everything, and then somebody gives you a medical writing test on a topic that you've never heard of before. And it's very easy to then panic and think, oh, my God, I can't do this because I don't know everything about, you know, small non-cell, small cell lung cancer or something, whatever it is. That's the point with this, is actually to be managing data and information. One of the things you will have to do is to assimilate new areas and new fields. So I think that's what I would add to this. And that would go actually whatever role you're working in, whether it's a writing test or in one of the other areas. So for me, the one thing is, you know, don't panic, the big letters, don't panic if it's not an area you want to. And I'd also say, you know, read the job description. We say about reading the brief, the job description gives you lots of information about what's expected of you. Eleanor mentioned that at the beginning. You really can pick up a lot of clues about the sort of style or what they might be looking for. And that's part of one of the things that points I want to make today is using the clues around you. It's not just this barrier that's been put in your way to trip you up, to you know, make you fail. This is actually also part of activities that you will be doing to decide whether this is the right company, the right role for you. So those are the points I wanted to make at the beginning.
Okay. Just sticking with the writing test and the format and so on, Sarah, I've seen you talked about it recently. About the sort of visualization of data and so on. And, you know, it's not, again, a writing test. You might think, I'm going to be asked to write X hundred words or something. It's not always quite as simple as that, is it? Sometimes it's to take this content and visually represent it, or produce some PowerPoint slides or an infographic or something like that. Just because I happen to have seen you talking about it recently, why don't you just sort of pick up on that aspect at the moment? Slightly different sort of approach to tests.
I have seen that quite commonly, like produce a slide set or a visual summary or a visual abstract. And again, it really reflects the type of medical writing that's happening within that agency. I'm sure a lot of people are aware, but a lot of medical writing involves not much writing and a lot of slide work and, you know, finding icons and infographics and visual ways to present the information. So again, the type of test that you've given is a clue as to the type of medical writing that goes on in that agency. If you're asked to write an abstract, then perhaps their focus is more publications role. You know, it's something that I talk about a lot. The role of the medical writer is becoming really quite broad now. You don't have to just understand complex data and be able to write about it. No, you need to be able to represent it visually now. So now we're straying into the realms of like graphic design principles as well. So it's a broad role. And again, when you're assessed on these things in a test, you're not designed to be, it's not, they don't expect you to be perfect, but you know, they're basically saying, can you think broadly in a more creative way, perhaps?
On that point, I don't know, Vicky, would you agree with what I'm about to say? But all of you, have you got an opinion on it? Again, something I find myself saying to a lot of people who are looking to come into this business, let's stick with medical writing for a moment, but the principle applies. The typical employer does not expect you to be a medical writer at the beginning. That's sort of the whole point. You know, you have people say, well, I can't get in without 3 years experience, or how can I do a writing test if I haven't got the experience? Or well, the whole point in most cases now is that if it says we want an entry level medical writer, that they are looking for someone who has aptitude and ability and interest and yada yada yada, and they will train you to be a medical writer, and they probably don't think that anyone else can train you as well as they can train you, sort of thing. Yeah, would you sort of agree with that, Vicky? Start with Vicky, but I'll get Ella to sort of say a few as well. But Vicky, on that front, am I saying something sensible there?
Yeah, no, I think you're right. I mean, when I was a hiring manager and assessing these tests, which I did a lot of in pharma, there were certain things that would be a big red flag for me. So particularly if they haven't understood the study, or the data's incorrect, or they haven't been able to interpret the study properly. For me, I was always looking for somebody with a scientific background that would enable them to be able to interpret that data accurately and demonstrate that in their test, because it would be a big ask for me to be able to, you know, teach fundamental scientific data interpretation in the role, you know, which is predominantly why we were hiring lots of people with PhDs and research backgrounds, not exclusively, but, you know, a lot of the time. So, you know, that would be, as I said, a big red flag if I was sure that they hadn't understood the study, hadn't understood the data, and they hadn't presented it in a clear way that demonstrated that. You've mentioned it several times that eye for detail is important, particularly in your test, to show that you've been through and you've QC'd your work and you've checked it. You know, we understand people are busy, but, you know, it is a crucial part of the job to be able to, you know, double check things and make sure there are no mistakes. So that's definitely something else that we'd be looking for as well. And also, I think somebody that can put together a narrative and a story flow that enables whoever's reading it, the audience, to be able to follow it easily and simplistically. I think that's some of the key things that I was looking for when I was marking them. And, you know, when you are a hiring manager and you're looking at someone's CV, you're matching it to their writing, you know, you understand that basically if they've got no experience, they're coming from an academic background, you're not going to be expecting them to work as, you know, a principal med comms writer would. But if you had a principal medical writing test in front of you from a principal medical writer, then, you know, your expectations would be a lot higher. So, you know, you will mark them relatively to the years of experience. What I would say is one really common mistake I see from people coming from an academic background, particularly if the brief has said it's for a scientific audience. I think, you know, academia teaches people to really deep dive on the background of scientific research. And I see a lot of people who are coming from academia use a lot of the space. Say if it's a slide deck, they might use half of the deck space talking about the background to the disease or the background to the drug. And for a scientific audience, you don't need to be that in depth. But of course, when you're in academia and you're taught to do this in your PhD, that's what you do. You know, you go away and you deep dive and you go down rabbit holes of all things and you talk about those and you give that kind of in-depth background in your research talks, which, you know, I do see that quite commonly. I think it's a common thing that people from an academic background do. So, you know, just bear in mind, if you write for a scientific audience, you just need some really key research background ideas to whatever drug or product it is or therapeutic area. You don't need to deep dive on that necessarily. Now, if it's for a more lay audience, you might want to expand that background a little bit more, you might need to, but generally for scientific audience, which I must say a lot of the writing tests that I've done and that I've also given to people have been for scientific audiences. I do see academics make that big mistake of deep diving so far into the background data that they don't really have the space then to showcase their interpretation of the data that they were given.
Okay. I'm going to just answer a question that came in. I think the point I was trying to make was that that an entry-level medical writer should be applying for an entry-level medical writing job. So the questions come in, does that mean if they want 3 years experience, we can apply anyway? No, that's exactly the wrong thing to do. The whole point is if they want 3 years experience, they probably want 3 years experience. So you're not going to get past the starting gate. The point is that there's a lot of jobs. I say a lot, it's a small business, but you know, there are certainly many more jobs now than there used to be, and looking for entry-level people, and they are looking for people who they know aren't already medical writers. They are looking for aptitude and initiative and so on, and the ability to be turned into a medical writer. I just think that's a really important point to stress at the moment. And I was going to bring it and picking up on a little bit on what Vicky was saying. The thing I say to people again, would you agree? And can you? I just think you're going to agree, and therefore expand on it. Often, what is important is what is the message. There's a message in that brief somewhere. And I think, like Vicky's saying, don't spend all your time talking about the techniques or the methodology or something. You know, what's the message? Is this medicine, I don't know, groundbreaking in some way? Is it providing, you know, there's a message in there. Is it better than something? Be careful with those terms. Okay. But, you know, what's the, you know, there's a message in there, and it's, you know, think about the fact that you, there's a message in there, and it's how to communicate the message to the audience, whether that be the scientific audience or the patient. Okay, so just talk a bit about that. I probably articulated that not very well, but Eleanor, you explain that bit better maybe.
Yeah, absolutely. So you definitely need to be thinking about the audience that you are writing for, and that is in a couple of different ways. So who are they and what are they interested in? What's their level of experience? What's their level of knowledge? Because as a medical writer, we're usually writing for audiences that we are not part of. So we need to be thinking about what they are going to want to know about this content. And that should be informed by the objective that you've given in the brief, that you've been given in the brief. So you should know what you are focusing on so that you can frame it in the most appropriate way for that audience. And if you're not sure what they're going to be interested in or how you should frame this piece of content, then you can always look for examples for that audience of this kind of content. So there are, you know, millions and millions of abstracts out there. If you know that you're writing for hematologists, go and look at a couple of abstracts for hematologists to see how much information they need about the background or things like that. Or if you have never written a visual abstract before, go and have a look at a couple before you get started, because that will show you the level of detail, the kind of terminology that you need to use and things like that. And it's something else that Vicky mentioned is red flags. Tailoring the content to the audience and the content type is incredibly important. And one of the red flags that I have seen in writing tests over the years is when people have been given a paper that they need to summarize either into an abstract or a newsletter or a slide deck, and they've just copied and pasted specific sentences from it. It's not a copy and paste test. It's a writing test. We cannot plagiarize. We have to paraphrase or summarize, use our own words, never, ever copy and paste, basically. And we need to make sure that we are doing that in an appropriate way for the audience, for the content type, because you may well have the same piece of information you want to include in an abstract or in a slide deck, but the way that you do that, the way that you choose words or maybe visuals to support that information would be very different depending on the type of content. And if you're not sure how to do that, examples would be really, really useful to guide you.
I feel like I lost a point in there. Can I just, Eleanor, I'm going to pin you down a bit. I was trying to say, or I just feel like we lost the point. There's a message in there. Whatever the audience, whatever it's, that, you know, there's a message. There's probably a commercial message in there. There's a patient benefit, or there's a something. And I just think that's really important, because if you can see that, then you can build the rest of it around that. Is that a fair point?
Yes, absolutely. So you need to know what the objective is for that specific audience, and that sort of indication should be included in the brief so that you understand why you are trying to communicate this particular piece of data or these results from a study to that audience. I think it's also important to think about another audience, the person who's going to be marking the test. So making sure that you have done everything that they have asked for in those instructions in the brief, but also why they are asking those particular things. So if they are asking you to present it in a particular way, what's that going to mean for them? Often it's going to be about how they're actually going to be marking potentially hundreds of different tests from different candidates. And so you want to make sure it's as easy as possible for them to do that, and that you're including everything that they have asked.
Okay, Vicky, you're trying to say, you wanted to jump in there, yeah?
Yeah, I just wanted to throw a question back at Eleanor, because about this idea, obviously not copying and pasting text, but what about the idea of like screen grabbing a graph and putting things in that? Because I've had that in my medical writing test that I've marked. From a personal perspective, I prefer it if people can show me that they can interpret the data a little bit. So things like data tables and being able to extrapolate more, maybe if we've given them a paper, being able to look in the supplementary and maybe presenting me some of that information as well and how it backs up the main message from the work. Those sort of things I found useful. But I have seen quite a lot of people just, you know, screen grab, say something like a Kaplan-Meier curve or, you know, I don't know, a forest plot, something that's very difficult to, you know, reproduce.
Yeah.
What would you say about that? How would you feel about marking a test like that, that screen grabbed a figure or an image?
Yeah, I think that's a really important point. Something like a Kaplan-Meier, it would take hours to redraw it. I know, I've had to do that, and it is not much fun. So having a, you know, a Kaplan-Meier when it is showing the primary endpoint of a study, and then you are interpreting it in the rest of the slide, or with the rest of the information in the abstract or something, fair enough. But copying and pasting the exact text from the source material, that's a red flag.
Yep, I agree with that. And I often advise people to do a screen grab of graphs because, again, a lot of the feedback that I get is that people are already spending like an entire day or, you know, several hours doing these tests. So to draw up a graph on top of that is going to, I think that's too much time personally. That's my personal opinion. I think, you know, the agencies are essentially trying to gauge. I was just chatting to somebody in the chat there. So there's no like certification or degree that can tell employers that you've got a background that makes you suitable for medical writing. And this is why they're all setting their own tests, because they, although they don't want you to be a medical writer, you still have to have some sort of baseline competencies to be eligible to even start. And this is some of the work that I do with my mentees. Things like, you know, just basically having a really good grasp of written English, being able to understand the source material, as Vicky said earlier, as Katia and Peter said, you know, being able to follow instructions and just have a good attention to detail. So these are all things that we use in our everyday life as a medical writer. So you have to be a certain level before you can even be sort of considered to come in to the job. So yes, I agree with Eleanor there. It's fine to sort of screenshot figures and tables, but when it comes to writing, they want it in your own words.
I'd also consider how it actually looks though. If you've got a table that takes up an entire page a manuscript, don't include that.
Maybe include
a few key elements and do it in your own table. Or think about another way that you can present that information that's actually going to be feasible for the audience to interpret it and see what's going on, rather than just kind of blinding them with something that they're not going to be able to take in.
And we're getting quite a range of questions coming in now. So I was going to say, it's just an important point, I think, that people aren't expecting you to spend, I don't know, a day, a week, you know, literally working on a test. I think the impression I get is that quite often you're given a bit of guidance, or you're asked how long you spent on the test. And is it fair to say that they're probably expecting an hour or two or three? They're not expecting 24, 36 sort of thing.
No, more than that. I would say
okay, go on.
Typically like 5 to 8 hours, I think people are spending on tests.
Okay.
Average.
Yeah.
5 to 8.
Day and a half, I would say.
And I would say that a lot of tests do ask you to say how long it's taken you for each of the individual elements within the test, because there may well be a couple of different things. And an awful lot of people don't include that time. You're losing easy marks by not including it. And we're not trying to catch you out again. We really are just trying to see how long it has taken you so that we understand what kind of approach you've been taking and how you may need guidance when you start working as a medical writer about how long you should be spending, because we have to work to budgets. We have specific numbers of hours for each of the tasks involved in putting together a project. And while you do take longer when you're learning the skills, we need to know that you're able to get something done in a reasonable amount of time rather than taking weeks and weeks and weeks over something that should take a few days.
Okay.
You can tell as well, I think, you can tell if somebody spent a long time on something or if they've done a rush job. And if they say to you, you know, I spent 2 hours on it, but it's absolutely fabulous with loads of background information, you know that 2 hours is not accurate.
Okay.
You get a good feel for that. Someone marking hundreds of these tests.
Yeah.
Okay. That's interesting, because I wouldn't. Okay. So all right, we're bound to differ a little bit, and I'm not the expert anyway, sort of thing. But if you're talking about a day and a half to do a medical writing test, that is a very significant chunk of time. And you know, if you're applying, as you must be, to a number of different places, that could become, to be honest, much more time than I would have said it was being expected. Just out of interest, where should we go with this one? What about feedback? In your experience, how many people get feedback on the test? You know, it's great if you've been, you know, that's great, lovely test, come in and talk to us sort of thing. But what about the ones who get rejected? How many people get feedback on tests that they get rejected on?
Not many.
And how important is that? You're saying not many.
Very few.
You say not, And do you want to expand? I mean, that doesn't seem like a good thing to me. I understand it might be because people are busy, but that doesn't seem like a good thing.
And that's why we're doing what we're doing. Go on, Eleanor. That's why we're here,
So from the perspective of somebody in an agency marking tests, you might be marking 10, 15, 20 in a day. You can't get through that and do your other work and send feedback or have calls with all of the people who've applied. Often with entry level roles, there are a lot of people who apply, and it just wouldn't be feasible for agencies who are running often on quite tight time margins to give this kind of feedback. Often if somebody emails and asks specifically for feedback, they might get a little bit, but they might not. It isn't feasible for us to sort of do it for everybody who applies. It just wouldn't work.
Just Katia, come in on that one and just talk about it in terms of someone going through any sort of a process. You know, you coach people going through the process. You know, how do you feel listening to that?
No, I totally agree. And there's actually very little that an agency could say that would really be helpful. That's why there is specific support out there, because it is a very tailored thing and it's a very specific thing. You might say, oh, there were too many errors. Well, that doesn't really help anybody. But actually, for the individual who's going through that process, if they want to really understand where their potential is and how far they can develop, is it that I'm not good, or is it that actually I need to gain confidence in a certain area, or realize that there's this thing called messaging, or that there's, you know, there's some of these elements that Vicky and Eleanor talked about in terms of what the agencies are looking for in the tests. These are quite sophisticated things. But I go back to what I said before. These are skills, techniques and strategies that you can learn. You cannot learn to pass a test. I think trying to just pass the test is the wrong objective. I need something that will just get me the test, because you miss out everything else that prepares you for a future career in medcoms. And there's so many elements, deciding what sort of writing you want to do, what sort of agency you want to work for, what teams work best for you. These are all the elements that are going to make a difference to whether you have a successful career or you pass the test, you get a job, and you're miserable for the rest of your career in agency work. And this is why it's so much more nuanced, and the discussion does extend beyond writing tests. That is one of the hurdles. But in terms of settling yourself into a new career, taking the effort to move from, let's say, academia into a commercial world like Medcoms or into pharma, as Vicky's seen people move into, the test itself is only one small element of it. And I think it's really important that all the prospective candidates who are going to start thinking through career change look at a much wider view and look at all the clues that will help them decide how they will move forward and then the skills that they need to move into a new career.
There's some really important points in there. And we're going to run out, well, we have run out of time. So I'm going to be a bit careful in my next couple of questions, but I'd like to sort of fit it in. There's a lot, we are focused on medical writing tests, but but as you're all saying, it's part of a bigger context, right? So certainly I've heard a lot of people saying the medical writing test is part of the screening, but maybe they're invited in for an interview. And when they come in for an interview, we ask them to do something. So they're doing it in front, on the spot, as it were. Maybe it's attention to detail or editing tests or stuff like that, because we're actually not quite sure whether they've done the medical writing test or not. I mean, there's a degree of policing going on. Just a comment on that front in terms of the different sorts of testing that might happen as you go through the process. It's not as simple as you've got a medical writing test, you either pass or fail, and then am I oversimplifying? Am I making some sense? Who wants to say something? Eleanor, say something on that one.
So it's a bit more nuanced than that. Often we will be kind of looking for specific things and specific sort of skills within the medical writing test, but it's quite subjective marking it, even if you've got the mark scheme. And I think that's one of the things that is it characterizes medical writing in general. It's all quite subjective. There's no one specific way of doing anything. And so I would suggest that the best thing that you can do is read a lot of the kind of content that you may well be asked to write and have a go at writing some of it, even if it's not for a writing test, getting that writing practice, reading things critically and thinking about what worked really well, what got the message across, what was clear and useful, and what didn't work so well, and what you might do if you were rewriting it to fix that. Those kind of things will help you build your skills as a writer, which will be useful for passing tests, but also in a future career.
Just in our final dying minute, and I'm emphasising that because we could get very bogged down in this, okay, but it's August 2023. We've had a couple of questions coming in about this. So let's just get a sense of where you think we're at in August 2023 in terms of use of AI, okay? So I'm just going to put that. Okay, so Sarah, you laughed. Go on. I just want a quick response from each of you because, you know, it's a live topic at the moment. So where are we at? What are you seeing agencies asking for? What are you seeing interviewees, people are doing tests, doing with AI? I'm going to try not to put words in your mouth. What's happening out there?
From my point of view, it's not my field of expertise at all. And I have a pretty old school view on it, actually. I wouldn't suggest that if you're doing a writing test, don't go into ChatGPT and try and get it to write some for you. It's not, you should be sort of just, you know, I use it sometimes when I've got like a writer's block, you know, when I want to stimulate some ideas and I realize there's some ways that it can help you, like create search strings or whatever. So at the moment, yes, okay. In terms of entry level positions.
And you would be encouraging your mentees not to go that direction. Okay, so Eleanor, I'm just bouncing around here. Eleanor, what have you got a comment? Are you seeing, we've had a comment in the box about, you know, agencies saying do not use ChatGPT. Or, you know, are agencies providing explicit instructions in this area at the moment or not? Do you know?
So I think some are, but it's not consistent. There, you know, there isn't sort of one way of doing anything. And I think, generally speaking, if you're being asked to generate content, then when you actually get the job, you would be unlikely to be able to use any kind of AI at the moment. other than for sort of very peripheral things, maybe a bit of background research, maybe idea generation, those kind of things. But for actually writing the content, if you don't want to do the test, you're not going to want to do the job. So don't bother. Do it yourself if that is what you want to do. And if it's not what you want to do, go and find a different career.
Okay,
yeah,
go Vicky.
I second that.
Oh, sorry, go on, Katya, go on.
That's
okay,
all I'm going to say. I second that.
Okay, Vicky, go on. Have a
yeah, I mean, the large language models as they stand at the minute don't write better than most medical writers. So, you know, it would be pretty obvious, I think, that, you know, you'd copied stuff out of ChatGPT. That said, you know, it's a bit the dark ages growing your head in the sand. The genie's out of the bottle. You know, agencies are going to have to embrace this. If they think people aren't using it, then, you know, that's just not true. I mean, because if you think about it, yeah, you can't put data in there, right? You know, it's sensitive data because it's open source material, right? So, you know, we know companies that have got into trouble that, not in the pharma sector, but in other sectors, you know, sensitive material has been leaked. So, you know, the pharma industry is very cautious about leaked material. So you must never put in any data that's not published or anything. But that said, you could put in some dummy data and get an idea of how things may have to look. And I don't think the way it's learning, I don't think it's going to be long before it is capable of doing writing that is to quite a high level. That's my personal opinion from dabbling around in it. I mean, at the minute, I think one of the best things it can do is give you broad information about a new therapeutic area that you might not have any knowledge about, and you're being briefed or asked to do something in quite quickly. You can get, you know, with the right prompting, you can get quite a good idea of the therapeutic landscape. And that's really, really useful if you're moving around from one thing to another. It can take a long time to get that background information. Obviously, you need to go away and double check everything because, you know, it hallucinates. Mm. But that said, it's a useful tool. And if it can improve your ability to be a top-notch medical writer, why would you not embrace learning how to use it effectively? That would be my stance. So a little bit different there.
Yeah, no, and I think there's a lot of range of opinion out there. And you know, where do you stop? I mean, if you just look at it as a tool, then what's the problem? You know, it's the same problem applying to spell check, or, you know, that somebody asked a question about using spell checking tools and things like that. You know, it's part of a spectrum of tools. Well, there's a spectrum of tools out there. I know that there are agencies out there that now actually encourage people to use AI tools and say, well, why wouldn't you? If you're going to become a medical writer here, you've got to understand how to use these tools. They're tools, and we're not expecting you, and you can't probably just write the thing just by sticking it in ChatGPT. But there's a minefield there, and I'm going to draw the conversation to a halt there, okay? We're over the time. I'm going to say a huge thank you to you guys. Anybody in the audience or watching this video, please be understanding that you all provide mentoring, coaching type services. You've all got YouTube videos and blogs and stuff. And I would encourage everyone to reach out to you and follow up. LinkedIn is an easy way of doing it, but you've also talked about your individual places to go. But basically, LinkedIn is an easy way to find out everything that you do. Okay. And if anyone's interested in what I'm doing, medcomsnetworking.com and the various associated websites, I'm going to draw a line there, but say to the audience, please don't run away. We've got a few minutes and there's some great questions in here, which I think we can go into. They're a bit specific, but I think we can cover off some of these questions quite quickly. So thank you very much. A little bit of a wave. We'll say goodbye to everybody and I'll stop the recording. Take care. Bye.